Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is British comedian Nick Coppin to talk about his career in comedy and his work teaching others to become stand-up comedians. Born and bred in London and now based in Brighton, he's spent over 20 years becoming a global circuit comedian and has performed all over the world. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Hi, Hannah. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just enjoying the sunshine, the rare sunshine in the city of London.
Oh, actually, how lovely. Yeah, it's supposed to be nice at the moment. Enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I say rare. That's a bit mean because it's actually been, it was really sunny before I went to Spain last. It's really sunny, you know, in Brighton and London when I got back. So I'm being a bit mean about the British weather there. It's been good.
Oh, lovely. So I'm interested to learn a bit about you and your background. How did you get into comedy? Was that your aim? Did you want to do that from a young age?
No. When I was a kid, I always used to love superheroes. Still do. Still a bit sad like that. But I always wanted to be a comic book artist and draw Spider-Man and the Hulk and all that sort of business. But then when I went to, you know, started doing art in secondary school and then going to galleries. Oh, this is a bit boring, isn't it? So it's not fun. So I decided I'd do lots of different things. At one point, I went to be a dolphin trainer. That's because I really liked Jaws 3, and that was in SeaWorld. So, but then again, there was no way I was going to do that. I didn't have the qualifications to go into marine biology. And then I sadly decided I wanted to be, well, I say sad, I wanted to be an actor. And because of drama school being a little bit, you know, a bit weird as well, I sort of found that a way into acting was stand-up comedy, because, you know, that's how a lot of the superstars of actors, you know, acting got into that. And so I wanted to do that. Now, the sad bit is, Hannah, the reason, I don't tell everyone this, the reason I decided I wanted to be an actor was because at the age of 15, 16, I absolutely fell in love with Kylie Minogue in Neighbours, and I thought, I'm never going to meet her unless I'm an actor. I know, sad, right?
I love that. Brilliant. And have you met Kylie yet?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you asked, because the real sad thing about that story is, I mean, obviously the answer is no, but I used to do regular gigs at a place called Heaven Nightclub. They used to have, it was in Covent Garden Comedy Club.
Yeah.
They used to have comedy on before the nightclub. And there was this one night, Kylie was doing like a special sort of like secret comedy show. She doesn't do comedy. She was doing a secret show in the big room. And someone at Heaven Nightclub said, well, do you want to hang around and watch Kylie? And I thought, well, you never know, I might get introduced to her. But I'd had such a long week and I was really tired. So I was like, I really haven't got the energy. And so I had to go home. I could have met her.
Oh, no.
I know. It's not really sad. Because I kind of figured I probably wouldn't meet her anyway. But you never know. It could have happened.
You were too tired for Kylie, Nick. I can't believe it.
That's what happens. Old age. You know, I first fell in love with her. I was young and I was vital. I had the energy. But then I got old and I was like, oh, no, I just want to go home.
Brilliant.
Sad times, Hannah, sad times.
Oh, yes. So when you first started getting into comedy, I mean, how did you get into comedy? How long before you started performing? Did you kind of learn your craft and then think, okay, I better go out and perform now? How was your journey?
Well, what happened was, it was something I'd wanted to do since late teens, but I didn't get into it until like sort of really late 20s. And that's because, you know, I didn't really know how to do it. I was working on London Transport as a signal in the ticket office. And then I sort of like a couple of people that I sort of met after wanting to do comedy for a few years, they were like, you know, you're quite funny. You know, you're really funny. Why don't you try writing comedy? And that kind of gave me the kind of, oh, I am funny. You know, so I just started looking in a magazine, which I think you have in Spain, Time Out, where they have listings of everything.
Yeah.
And in the good old days, before comedy changed a bit, it was like there's this big comedy section in the Time Out magazine. And it was like they'd have like new act nights and it would be like interested acts should call. So I called a couple of them up, booked a couple of spots in. And the actual first gig I did was actually a weird kind of competition thing between the comedy. It was like in conjunction with the Comedy Store and Hooch drinks. So it was like this kind of weird sponsorship thing. I did about 3 or 4 minute spot. I think they'd seen enough and they moved me on. So it's just a case of it was looking in the magazines and getting little open spots above pubs. And back then it was like easy to get spots because it's like, oh yeah, turn up next week or whatever. You could turn up on the night and get on. But now it's like really hard to get spots. It's like got to bring a buddy and all that. But yeah, it was great. I was just like, you turn up at little gigs you know, get to know people, have a little spot, have a few drinks afterwards. It was a great time.
So now, obviously, things have changed in how you get out there and get yourself spots and things. But how do you see comedy being changed? Because we're seeing a lot in the paper about comedians being cancelled and easily offending people. It must be so difficult to be a comedian, to not offend people.
Well, it is, yeah. And, you know, now it's tougher to get gigs. And, you know, even COVID aside, it's not as easy to get gigs. There's a lot more people want to do comedy, but you're right, it's like there is a lot of can we say this, can we say that. But I do think, even though there is this kind of cancel culture and you can't say this and people get easily offended, and but it's not as bad sometimes as people think. I've done a couple of gigs recently in universities, and on the way down there, myself and a fellow comedian, Dan Fardell, who was actually doing stuff in Spain recently, we were like, oh, it's a student gig. They're going to be worried about this. You know, you can't say anything. You know what the millennials and the students are like there. But they were actually lovely. Once they get, comedy, which again, I talk about in the courses, is about if you connect with an audience and they know that you're not being serious and, you know, it's just a bit of a joke, they'll accept a few more things. But yes, it is a bit of a worry nowadays, it has to be said.
Yeah. And a lot of something that comedians can do often is pick on people in the front row, particularly. You know, you see it in stand-up shows, you see it in comedians when they release their DVDs. It's quite a well-known thing that if you're sitting near the front, you could easily get kind of laid into by the person on stage. That must be kind of difficult to judge sometimes, because you could get that wrong. You know, you could take the mickey out of someone and they could say, hey, you know, and get really offended by it. Do you have to kind of ease into it, so to speak, while you're doing it, as opposed to like insulting someone within the first 20 seconds?
I like the way you chose the word insulting. Hannah, you've seen me too many times. So, but that's the thing, isn't it? One of the things is, first of all, people, when they don't want to sit in the front, I'm like, look, sit in the front, no one will pick on you. And then when they sit in the front, you're like, ah, suckers, you know. But I say to them, look, we'll chat to you, but we're not going to be mean. Because, I mean, some comedians will be mean, but we don't like that, because that's why people don't want to sit in the front row. And I'll tell you this, when people don't want to sit in the front row because they're a bit worried, usually those people that, because they have to sit in the front row because there's nowhere else to sit, they usually enjoy the show more. Even the ones you kind of pick on, you go, you know, you might call them this or say that and have a bit of banter, and they just have a really great time. And then obviously people remind them at work the next day, oh, you're the so-and-so. And it's great, and they enjoy it the most. But it is like that. It's about connecting with the audience, isn't it? It's just, I mean, you get to learn to read a room. And so you'll talk to someone, you think, as people are coming in, oh, yeah, he or she's the one to talk to. And that couple, or that Australian, or German, or whatever, and then you'll have a bit of a banter with them. But you soon pick up, if they don't want to play ball, then you pick up on it and you go, right, move on. But I've seen some comedians just keep digging that hole, and you're like, no, just move on. You know, and you just read the room, and that's where experience comes in, isn't it? And you just go, nah, they're not up for it, move on to someone else.
So have you been in that situation where you've realised someone's not up for it, and you have to just move on and take it with a pinch of salt?
Yeah, I mean, I've been there. I mean, most comedians have. And you do. You can just see that some people just won't respond, or some people actually make it clear. It's like, you know, even if they're joking a bit, they go, do you have to keep talking to me? You're like, all right. You know, and sometimes they get into it and they really start to enjoy it. But other times, yeah, you're like, yeah, they don't want to be involved. And, you know, and you just move on. But, yeah, I've been in that situation a few times. And that's why, I mean, I like comparing shows, and I'm quite chatty and bantery and storytelling myself. So I'm not a one-liner, fourth-wall comedian. I'm like, so I think over the years, I've certainly learned how to gauge when people don't want to be spoken to.
Yeah. And how did you get into the comparing? What's the difference?
Well, I think compares tend to be more chatty. You do get lots of different types of comedians, and you do get the ones that are like, I'll just want to do jokes. It's a bit fourth-wall. I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to break that fourth-wall. And then you get others that want to banter. And again, like after a number of years of doing open mic things above pubs, you start to get paid, you start to drive all over the country, and eventually go overseas to do comedy festivals and things in Spain, things like that. So it's one of those things that when you start doing more gigs, and based on your style, people will say, oh, do you want to MC my gig? And that's a good way to start getting paid, because you're there the whole night, and, you know, you've got to sort of hold the night together. And if someone's like very friendly and chatty and energetic, and confident, they tend to get asked to MC. So it's kind of like this natural progression progression into becoming an MC. But, you know, I do sets as well, as well as MCing. But, yeah, I do like MCing because you get to chat to people in a different way. It's more, you're more their funny mate for the night, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And with regards to teaching others how to do it, does that mean that, that anybody can be taught to do it? Or do you ever have people come that, that want to be taught and you think, oh, God, this is never going to work?
Well, yeah, there have been some courses I've done and you do kind of go, I don't think you're cut out for this. And, you know, in many ways, because I haven't really got that personality to connect with an audience or be lively or because, you know, they just don't seem like they're really up for the you know, because it's not easy, like, getting out and doing gigs all the time. And weirdly, some people, a lot of people that do the comedy courses don't do it because they want to be comedians. They do it, I don't know, for confidence at work, tick it off the bucket list, someone got them a present for their birthday. It's like one of those things. But, you know, after doing it a while, you sort of, you realise who's going to be good and who's not going to be good. And I've got great, sometimes I can lack confidence, as we all can, you know, the imposter syndrome. Like, I did a corporate gig this afternoon. I'm like, oh, my God, it could be terrible. But they were lovely. But I am totally confident that if people come on my comedy course, which is like a few hours one day, a few hours the next day, and then we have a showcase straight after the course, and I'm totally confident if I go through how to come up with material, how to edit material, how to connect with an audience, I'm confident that I can get anyone up there being confident and get a few laughs. I'm confident in my ability to do that.
Oh, brilliant. And you must have the opposite when you get people, particularly guys, I expect, who come in to do the course who think they're hilarious and maybe aren't.
Well, yeah, I mean, occasionally you do. I mean, I've had a couple, especially if they're two mates together, and they sort of sit there and they'll chip in. And the weird thing about it is that, you know, sometimes it's like you've got to become more of a, you know, like headmastery, like type. I go, no, calm down. Other people have got to do this, but they still want to think they're funny. But then when you get them up doing these practical writing exercises and you get them to editing jokes, I think they soon soon knock it out of them and go, you see, it's not as easy as you thought, is it? You know, And because I've done that at gigs before, you get someone who's like a bit like that, you know, Mr. Laddie Lad. And I go, okay, why don't you get up here and try it for yourself? And then they get up there and they get behind the mic and they realise that it's just not that easy. And absolutely. In the end, they just tell some really lame joke. And you go, there you go, mate. So why don't you sit down and be quiet for a little while?
Sit down and shut up, exactly.
Yeah, oh, basically. Dear. But yeah, but it's interesting to see the different types of people you get on there. And some of the people you wouldn't think would be great, they are. And, you know, and other people that think they're great, they're not. But yeah, not everyone's going to be a comedian. But I'm confident in my ability to teach them enough to get them up there and get a few laughs in front of a supportive audience.
Yeah. And I noticed you had a book out as well, Comedy World. Tell us about the book.
Oh, I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, it's basically how that came about. And weirdly, I didn't write it in the conventional way, as in, you know, sitting down at a laptop or a pen and paper. I actually dictated the book into my phone. And what happened was, there's a guy, because I sometimes host children's shows, and there's a chap by the name of Stuart Reed. He's Scottish, and he's like an author for children's books. And he comes and he presents his, you know, stories from his book, and then he sells his books after the show. So we've done shows together, and so I've talked to him about, you know, the potential of maybe doing a book and whatever, and he's like, yeah, but I just never got around to it. And then the Edinburgh Fringe, just before COVID struck, he sort of saw me sort of messaging. Now, you know, in your phone, where you're basically talking to your phone, it writes the message for you. And then send it. Well, he saw me. He goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, just dictating a message. The phone writes it for you when you talk. Because I've got an idea. Why don't you, when you're just walking around, you know, having a little walk in the park, dictate a comedy story into your phone notes, right? And then just send it to me. I'll keep it on file. And then we'll kind of go through it. Once we feel we've got enough to make a book, we'll go through all of these chapters, these stories. We'll edit them, put them in an order, and then put them in a book. So that's kind of just how it happened. It was like all these stories of traveling around the world doing comedy, one story of which being one of the worst gigs I've ever done in Torremolinos in May 2018.
Have a read of that. Why was it so bad?
It was just like, it was someone's birthday party in a bar, and they wanted me to do a comedy gig, and a friend who was over there, who I used to do comedy with, he said, will you do this? Do it for her. And it was basically a load of British and Irish expats that really didn't want to be there for comedy. They just wanted to get drunk. And then you've got just me on stage waffling on, trying to do a bit of banter that they just weren't. I mean, I'd love to see the whole story, Hannah, but you haven't got time. But what made it worse is that there were friends on holiday with me. And they're the sort of friends that even if you have a great gig, they'll tell you you were rubbish. So trust me, when I died on stage in Torremolinos, they've never let me forget.
Oh no, that's terrible. I mean, that must be one of the hardest things when you've got, when you're doing a gig and you've got people that just are talking. It really annoys me when I'm at any kind of gig, whether if I'm at the theatre or watching comedy, and you've got people that are just yapping the whole time. It's like, why didn't you stay at home? It's really rude and annoying.
It is, and that's the thing. I mean, people think, oh, how do you do with hecklers? Hecklers, sometimes they're tough to deal with, but generally you have a bit of back and forth. It is that indifference when people just like are just talking around you. It's like you can't, and yet they just won't engage. And also, what, like I say to people, which is good to get the rest of the audience on side, look, mate or whoever, look, you can talk. You ruined tonight. You're not ruining it for me because I'm going to do a gig tomorrow and next weekend. I'm fine. But all these people that have paid £10 or £15, you're ruining their night. And sometimes they kind of realise, and other times they're just so drunk they just won't stop talking. Yeah. They just keep going on and on. And yeah, it is a pain in the backside, but you know, occasionally you have to deal with it. But most audiences are respectful and they're up for it. So you know, you take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I take my hat off to you, Nick. I know you like your hats as well.
Yeah. People do say to me, do you ever not wear a hat? So, well, yeah, sometimes. Well, when I'm in the sea, I don't wear a hat.
When I'm in bed, yeah. Well, I think I think you do a great job. I've seen you a couple of times in Estepona at Louis Louis with the stand-up comedy Spain. And yeah, always enjoy seeing you. And I have a message from your favourite Scouser, Pierre. He wanted to say hello.
Brilliant.
When are you coming back to us?
Actually, the next one in Estepona at Louis Louis is the 28th of September.
Brilliant.
And then we've got one in Sotto Grande at Fresco on 29th. We're still working on a couple of other dates, but they're definitely in. So hopefully Pierre will be back in the front row. He was great laugh, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was well up for it. So, yeah, he's always welcome. Might have given him a free ticket. We don't know.
Ooh,
we're not sure yet.
He'll be listening going, oh, how do I get that?
Yeah, he'll be like, yeah, where am I going? Hey, where am I going to get that ticket? And then you've got Lucy going, no, what's all this free ticket business?
Exactly. Well, myself, Pierre, and all the rest of us will be there to see you again in September. So really looking forward to it.
The only one thing I'll say, Hannah, the next time we take a photo, can you try and take it from the front so you don't catch my beer belly?
Okay, I'll try. I'll sit around the other side next time. My apologies.
Or alternatively, I could just slim down. So, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks so much, Nick. Lovely to chat with you. Take care.
Lovely to chat to you. You have a good day.
Bye-bye.